listener-supported public radio, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Welcome to the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Sabine Pooks. April is National Poetry Month. This April also brings the return of some open mic performances in spring after a long, long winter, which I imagine is quite artistically inspiring for some poets. We're going to talk about all of that with our guests today. They're all poets, and while not all of them write exclusively about fishing, they've all participated in Fisher Poets. Our guests are Brent Johnson of Clam Gulch. Hi, Brent. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks.
Georgie Everly from Nikiski. Hey, Georgie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Clark Whitney of Soldotna. Hi, Clark.
Hi, glad to be here.
And Steve Schoonmaker of Kasilof. Hey, Steve.
Hello, glad to be here. Thanks.
Thank you all for being here. First, I want to start by asking you guys how you would characterize your work and kind of how you got into poetry in the first place. I know it's a big question. I don't want to spend too much time on that because there's a lot I want to talk about today, but I think it's kind of a good foundation. So, Brent, why don't we start with you? How would you kind of characterize your poetry, and how did you get started in the first place?
My mom read me poems, Child's Garden and Nursery Rhymes, and Dad bought me a Robert Service song poetry album when I was a kid. I just fell in love with it, and I didn't do nothing until long after I was married, and then there was a radio station in Homer was giving away turkeys for poems. I think they gave them away whether your poem was any good or bad, because I won a turkey, so, and then I just kind of got into it after that.
Why turkey? Why was that the incentive? Do you know?
Well, I think it was at Thanksgiving time. The radio station was, you know, doing the typical, let's give away some turkeys.
Great. And what style of poetry would you say you tend to write in, or do you not kind of adhere to a specific style?
You know, I sort of do ballads and folkish kind of poetry, typically rhyming poetry. My favorites are those that are after a meter and whatnot. If I get lazy, I skip the meter.
Great. Georgie, what about you? How did you get into writing poetry?
Yeah, so, I remember in middle school, we had a poetry segment of our language arts class in eighth grade, and I started writing a bit, and I really liked it. And then, you know, I didn't really sit down and write again until the Alaska Marine Conservation Council called for submissions to their Young Fisherman's Almanac. And I had, I wrote a poem about my dad as a fisherman, and I submitted it. And then a year later, their community organizer with AMCC reached out and said, hey, there's a big event for fisher poets in Astoria, Oregon every year, and we could sponsor you to go. And so I wrote a couple more poems, and then that was it. Then I met some other poets on the peninsula, and we've performed together, and I've since gone to the Big Fisher Poets Gathering for a few years, and now it's a big part of my life.
That's so cool. I'm excited to talk about Fisher Poets. I've heard a lot of really cool things, and I know it was different this year, but it sounds like it was still able to feel like a community in some ways as well. Clark, what about you? How did you get started in poetry?
Like Brent, my mother read to me a lot, and some of that was poetry. And then I remember we moved to Alaska in 63, and as we were driving, it was a long trip to Alaska, my mother did a lot more writing. And at that time, I started hearing Robert Service, and poetry for me is a way to ask myself questions and answer some of the big unanswerable questions. So I enjoy it for that.
And what about you, Steve?
Well, my mom says I used to write her rhymes and little Christmas cards and stuff. I don't remember that much. My whole adult life, I've been, commercial trapping, commercial fishing. I did a lot of years guiding, ragging horses, stuff in the woods, you know. And then in the early 2000s, I went to KPC. I got a grant as a fisherman for a small business degree. And the algebra was kicking my butt. So, you know, I made friends with the people in the Learning Center, and Holly Wiley was particularly influential. And Rob Justice, some people I met open mic at the college. So I started doing a few poems, mostly things like, you know, I came back from a hunt. I had to find a way to write about it, and it came out in rhyme. I remember at the college, Holly would sit right in front of me and just be so intrigued by my poetry. And I was reading it then, and she got me on a radio station, KWJG. I said, really? And she put me on there. Then Rob got me on KDLL, and people started telling me I had poetry. And so I started writing it. And then Fisher Poets happened. I had 14 years straight now. And so now I write poetry.
Yeah, you mentioned, some of you mentioned rhyme, and Steve, you mentioned kind of stumbling across, it seems like kind of realizing that you were writing poetry. How do you know when you're writing poetry? Do you feel like you have to adhere to a system of rules? Do you feel like it's more free form than that? How do you know that what you're writing is poetry? And how do you know when you can call yourself a poet? Is that something any of you want to talk about?
You asking me?
Sure, Steve, go ahead.
I think poetry is as open as the sky. You know, really, it is. My stuff came out in rhyme. I think someone like Brent, you know, I was a Robert Service fan, you know. And then things like Joni Mitchell music and a lot of that music is poetry. It really affected me, you know. I mean, I think I grasped the metaphors of life, the metaphors. That's what kind of got it going, you know. So I think that sometimes when people share poetry, it seems like prose. Some people do rhymes. Some people do haikus. I don't think you could pin a tail on this animal, this poetry thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Georgie, what about you? Does that resonate with you too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the poems I write, they rhyme. They often tell a story. They're pretty emotional. But yeah, since I've kind of immersed myself in this Fisher Poets community, I've just seen the diverse range of how people write. Some folks use music. It often doesn't rhyme, you know. I typically don't write, you know, beautiful lengthy prose, but I know a lot of poets that do, and that is a something I really admire as well. And I think that's just how writing is, an art and expressing yourself. There's no rules and there's no boundaries, and I mean, you can really, it's all feeling and emotion, and that's what makes it art.
Yeah, that's a good segue. I'd love to talk about Fisher Poets. My understanding, it's been going on for a while in the Pacific Northwest, but that there's also been some Fisher Poets up here specifically. And I know that this year it was virtual, and you could watch it on YouTube. So why combine fishing and poetry? What is kind of the significance of that combination? And what does Fisher Poets mean to you guys to be able to participate in that with folks from all over the country? Clark, can we start with you on this one?
Sure. I think that the experiences that you have when you're out there, when you're commercial fishing or spending time outdoors, can be really inspiring. And you know, when you're commercial fishing, a lot of times you're subjected to some really extreme conditions. And I think maybe some of my best poetry comes from experiences that I've had that are really challenging or bordering on life-threatening, and it just engenders a lot of emotion, and then that emotion can come out in my writing. So I think that's why. You know, it's interesting, going to Fisher Poets, there's a vast array of people that participate in Fisher Poets, and there are some people that have had very little formal or no formal education that can write. And then there are college professors that really struggle with writing. So I just think maybe it's the romantic aspect of fishing or something that helps to inspire that.
Do you tend to write poems while you're working, while you're at sea, or is that something you do when you come back? What is kind of your process? And at what point in your in the you know, while you're feeling inspired, when do you kind of sit down and write? What does that look like for you?
Well, for me, I like to say that I write the poems in my head before they ever get on paper. And I'm inspired by melodies and rhythms. You know, poetry is so close to music, and a lot of my poems turn into songs. And so with me, it can be a rhythm generated by that, by things in nature, wind and waves and sounds of birds and so I'll get like a rhythm or a melody going in my head, and then I'll just start filling it in with words. That's how it works for me.
Brent, what is your creative process like? And you've written about fishing as well, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've written a lot about fishing. Yeah. I've fished for 53 or 54 years. I know I look like I'm 100, but really it's a lot younger than that.
Tell us a little bit about your process and about what about fishing and inspires you to write.
You know, there is a lot of beauty in fishing, the scenes, the mountains, the birds, the boats we see, the people. There's so much to write about, so many things that we want to express ourselves. We want to capture what we see. We don't have a camera with us, and so we want to capture that and tell it to an audience. There are life and death experiences. I'd be surprised if my fellow fisher poets haven't been in a life and death experience once or twice. I've been in several. And those are emotional as could be. So yeah, those kind of things.
What about
I do want to add one thing, and that is I was just horsing around with poetry, and I started taking classes at Kenai Peninsula College a long time ago, and just took a couple classes a year, and Dr. Christian and a number of other teachers there really showed me, kind of got me on track to make my poetry a lot better.
Something I've always wondered, because you guys have all kind of mentioned in one way or another stumbling across poetry and kind of how it can be very free form. How does poetry work in an academic setting? Is it hard to kind of fit poetry within kind of the confines of academia, of the classroom, or are there things about poetry that you feel like can't be taught in a classroom? How does it work learning about poetry rather than kind of coming across it in a way that's outside of academia? I don't know if anyone.
Everything
wants to speak
I've
to that,
ever right? done in my life. The more I learn about it, the better you are at it. Gosh, the first year I went set netting in 1962 with my mom, I'm sure we were the laughing stock of the beach. I mean, holy cow, this old woman with a bunch of little kids set netting, geez. But, you know, you learn. And there's two ways to learn. One is trial and error, and the other is have somebody who knows how to do it teach you. And so I like to do both, but I didn't find the classroom a tough environment at all. I found it inspiring, and I'm able to take those things that happened to me in fishing, or I've been involved in religion a lot. And so that's kind of a crazy thing to where I am now. But so I've written a lot of religious sort of poetry, and whatever your life is, whatever you are, you know, then that comes out in poetry.
Georgie, how long have you been participating in Fisher Poets? And you mentioned kind of finding a community of poets locally. What is that community like, and how often do you guys get to see each other and read poetry together?
Yeah, so I haven't been, I would say I haven't been in the community very long as my friend here, but for the last 5 years or so. When I had that first opportunity to go to Fisher Poets, a friend reached out and said, you know, the coffee shop in Kenai, Veronica's, they were doing a small Fisher Poets event. And that's where I met Clark and Steve, and then our friend Measy as well. And Steve and Measy were about to go to Fisher Poets. And I was just blown away by their work and how polished they were and what performers they were. And that really, you know, inspired me. And I would say they were mentors in a way. So yeah, since then, yeah, I just really kind of dove in. And Clark and Steve and me and Measy, we've got to perform at Salmon Fest the last couple of years, and that has been incredible. People love it. You know, it's just a fun event, and it's a way to communicate to the public what commercial fishing is like at such an awesome event that is all about salmon. And we're all salmon fishermen. So yeah, it's been fun. We've performed at, you know, smaller community events, coffee shops, rallies. We've done quite a bit of activism, things like that. And that's been really fun to use your voice for a cause you believe in. So yeah, this past year, the pandemic, we haven't been able to meet other than virtually at Fisher Poets, but I'm hoping that will start up again.
Yeah, what was virtual Fisher Poets like? Were you able to kind of retain some of that kind of communal aspect? And I guess for folks who have never been or don't know much about it, what is Fisher Poets like in a normal year? What is kind of the structure of the event?
Yeah, so it's a 2-day event in Astoria, Oregon, last weekend of February every year. And I think the past couple of years, there have been over 100 poets that have performed over, you know, 7 or 8 venues each night. Everyone gets 15 minutes to perform. And the whole town is all about Fisher Poets that weekend. The art galleries are open. There are workshops. People are selling things. It's just all about commercial fishing and using poems and music and stories to communicate that lifestyle. So I know, Steve, you've been going for quite a while. So if you want to add on to that, I mean, I've only gone for 3 years.
Yeah, Steve, how long have you been going to Fisher Poets?
If you count last year, which was Zoom, that's 14 years straight. I'd heard about it in Pacific Fishing Magazine. I'd heard about it some. And how did it start? I know. I was in Cordova. And they had a Fisher Poets event there at that time. And the first year I couldn't go because I was out fishing. I couldn't get back into town. And the second year I wanted to make it. And the day before the event, my engine blew on my boat, totally discombobulated. I didn't know if I was going to make it down to the bar. And a friend of mine said, hey, get down to the bar, get the mic and ask around. You might be able to find an engine. So I did. I got down there late and I got the mic and sure enough, hands thrust up. And I'd had some memorized poems. And a woman named Joanna Reichart was there. And she'd been going to Astoria a bunch, a wonderful artist and poet, musician. And she asked me if I'd ever heard of this. And I said, yeah. And I didn't think much about it. Well, she got a hold of the folks in Oregon and they sent me an email, said, send us some of your stuff. Oh, I wasn't really crazy about the idea at first. I thought, well, this is the big rodeo. This is down in America. You know, I don't know about all this, you know. A good friend of mine called me in. Leon Metz has a taxidermy shop in Soldotna. He called me in there and said, I'd like you to help me, Steve. And I went there and he handed me a ticket to Seattle. He said, I hope that's close enough. I want you to go do this. And people wrapped around me and got me down there. So I didn't know. I went down there and I had my 4 or 5 memorized poems and it was fabulous. Instantly I fit in, instantly. So that caused me to start writing for it, you know. Another whole year coming up, I started writing specifically Fisher poetry.
Oh, so you were actually kind of writing with Fisher poet performances in mind, actually.
Yes.
Wow, absolutely. Okay.
Well, in my case, I think, you know, the connection to the sea, you know, the whole romance of the ocean and the fishing industry and salmon particularly, I started feeling a spiritual responsibility as a harvester to share my conscious awareness of what I felt. And so I started writing about it. It was kind of an activist type stance, which I wasn't really aiming at, but it happened that way. And then the Pale Mind thing came along. And so I went down there with some of that stuff. I started meeting more and more people who were interested. And then my poetry became somewhat activist.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about activism. How does one make poetry activist, and how do you kind of fit those parts of your life together? That's such an interesting concept to kind of combine those two things.
Well, you know, poetry, it comes from inside. You know, it's an emotional response to things. And there's so many metaphors in the natural world you can write about. I started seeing problems with our fisheries. You know, I started seeing an overabundance of harvest and a lack of abundance of consciousness. I don't want to go do a long story, but I remember a few years ago, I wrote this poem called Illusions of Separateness. And it was kind of heavy. And I had one guy I could go to, it was a soundboard, my buddy Rob Justice. He'd tell me straight up if he thought it was good or bad or whatever. And he heard it and he said, man, you got to be doing a dance with that. And that's kind of a downer, you know. Well, I went back and I wrote 17 verse poem and I took it to Oregon. And, you know, I've done a lot of performing around, but that one really hit. I mean, one time in Oregon a few years ago at the Esther Event Center, the place was plugged, no place to stand at all. About 500 some people, whatever. And I got to that poem, and the whole place got on their feet.
What was that poem about?
That poem's about our place in the world, about our consciousness, about this illusion of separateness that we're separate from nature. Well, then I started realizing that when I went to Oregon and they gave me the stage, I could say whatever I wanted. I could bring whatever I wanted, you know what I mean? And it started bouncing around. And I see like Georgie and Clark and Brent. We all have the same thing, you know what I mean? We have a way to share it. So that's what got me the most is I realized that I could put together something of heart and I could take to the big stage in Oregon and people would embrace it.
Georgie, you also mentioned activism. Can you talk a little bit about your kind of experience incorporating activism into your poetry or incorporating poetry into your activism?
Yeah, well, what's that? Well, I mean, for instance, a few years ago, we had a big campaign, a ballot measure, Stand for Salmon. Before that, we had Protect Bristol Bay. And before that, we had the Clean Water Initiative. So I started getting involved with Coconut Keeper and other people. And during the Stand for Salmon thing, Georgie and Measy and myself and Caitlin Vodla and some other folks went down to Juneau. And we performed in Juneau. And we went to the Capitol and met with the legislators. That same year, I got flown to Kodiak to do poetry and to Haines to do poetry to, you know, promote salmon habitat. So that became kind of my issue. It was a way I felt like I could spiritually connect with people in a conscious way, you know, because this is the last place on the planet that has this kind of resource, these fisheries, you know, it's wild salmon. So it fit right in. And I was surprised at first how people would actually listen. You know, they'd grasp this stuff. It wasn't just me banging on my soapbox, you know. It was me kind of coming around the corner with this poetry kind of thing, you know.
Right. Well, that's interesting. It's kind of like a way to get through to people that maybe hits some different kind of nerve. Georgie, does that resonate with you? What do you think about using poetry as a way to kind of touch people in that, in a regard that's kind of political?
Yeah, that's right. You can use poetry to do that in a way that if you just simply tried to rile folks up, ask them to help, you know, sign a petition, go here, call your legislator and such, that's not, I've found, as effective as using art to get that across. Because when you use poetry or music or a story to really connect to people, that's what resonates. And I think that's what causes them to want to take action. And I think that's the whole point of activism, is you want people to stand up with you for those causes. So, yeah, I've found that it's really meaningful too, as a poet, to see that reaction and response from people. I mean, the last couple of years, it's been really a lot about Pebble Mine. And that's been, I think, really close to a lot of people's hearts. I mean, it's it affects Bristol Bay fishermen, but it affects Cook Inlet fishermen too. And all of us, and we're all in this together. I mean, we're brothers and sisters in fishing, and you know, you stand up for your family. So yeah, absolutely. That's been a great way to get across the message that we all know is so important. Like Steve said, protecting salmon habitat. Another message I get across in my poetry is trying to get younger folks to stand up and stay in the industry and participate, because especially a few years ago, I mean, we saw over the last few decades, a lot of young folks leave the industry. And I think that's changing now. I've seen a lot of excitement and more folks wanting to get involved in the fisheries that are, you know, of the younger generation. So yeah, that's been an especially important message to me that's really close to my heart.
That's really cool. I also want to talk about kind of young people and poetry in a bit. But first, I want to ask, Brent, you've written a book, a poetry book. Do you have it right there with you? Are you going to? There we go. Multiple books, The Loose Zoo and Ricochet Rhyme. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like to compile your poetry into a book, and why choose a book as a vehicle to kind of to publish your poems, and tell us about writing a poetry book?
You know, I guess we authors want to have an audience, and so without an audience, who are we? You know, we're just writing our poetry for ourselves, and so that's it. I just wanted to share my poetry. Ricochet Rhyme is a book of memoirs. It's got some, I would say, good adventures in there. We certainly had some interesting adventures. The poetry, at the time I wrote the book, I didn't even have a spell check on my computer. And I was totally uneducated on poetry. It was probably before I took any of those classes I mentioned. I wouldn't call the poetry all that great, but the memoirs are pretty good. The Loose Zoo, though, I'm a big fan of this book. In fact, one night I was talking to somebody on the planning commission after I got off and was on the assembly. I went in to speak to them. And the lady, one of the planning commissioners, said, "Did you write The Loose Zoo?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Oh, that's, I read that to my son every night," or something like that.
Oh my gosh, how great.
All warmth in the heart and whatnot. You know? She said, "That's our favorite book." Anyway.
What a cool, that must have been such a great moment for you.
It was a great moment. As authors, there are not that many. So as far as writing it and compiling it, I had Laura Feo do the artwork in this book. And, you know, she's dang good. And so there's a lot of great pictures in the book. And the poetry, I even think the poetry is pretty dang good in The Loose Zoo. It's a children's book. And so.
Yeah, were you writing with the audience of children in mind? And
I was on that particular book.
So how do you tailor your poetry towards children in particular? Is there a way that you kind of scale back on the language that you usually use? How do you write toward that audience?
Of course, scale back on the language somewhat, but you'd be surprised. These are short poems, and children are smart, and they can get introduced to a new word now and again. And so I didn't find that. And besides, I'm not all that educated anyhow, so it's easy for me to write on a third grade level. I think it came together pretty good. You know, there's a lot of things that go into a book, and so planning it and you write a bunch and then you try to throw out maybe 3 to 1 of what you keep or something like that to keep your best stuff. And then there's figuring out how to get it printed and a whole nother bunch of stuff that goes into that. And then marketing. I'm horrible at marketing. I want to write. I really am not interested in signing, going to a book signing. I don't want you to feel like you need to buy my book because you're my friend. I want people that don't know me to buy my book. So anyway, I'm a total failure at marketing, but the book experiences were cool. I look forward to doing another poetry book yet before I die. And now I've got some fairly good stuff, I think. So we'll see.
That's great. And while we're kind of talking about kids, I know there are all sorts of ways for kids to get involved in poetry, specifically in school. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of kids who are watching the inauguration saw Amanda Gorman perform and were found a great deal of inspiration in the fact that there was a young woman behind the podium, had such a platform, and obviously her poetry is very powerful.
Posted her on Facebook.
Yes, yes. Did any of you, you know, participate in poetry when you were kids, or do you think that there are kind of good ways for kids to get involved in poetry? Do you think it's something that kids aren't learning about enough when they're kids in school? Do any of you want to speak on that?
I can speak to that. I just retired last spring after teaching school in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District for 30 years. And as a teacher, as an English teacher, I wanted to share my passion with my students and try to inspire them. I think really good teachers inspire their students. I think, you know, it can start with that. And I recognize the value of poetry and song and connecting with people. And that was, you know, really applicable in the classroom. I like poetry because it allows for interpretation, and sometimes you're not restricted by the rules of grammar when you're doing poetry. I like that. And so when I would introduce poetry to my students, I would start, you know, pretty much everyone loves music, and I would say music is poetry, and we would analyze songs and see how they worked without really strict attention to the formal rules that you know, poetry. I taught middle school, so that's seventh and eighth graders. So I found that if I kind of let them do what they wanted, you know, and let them express themselves, that worked well. I also, poetry is really, it's a list of phrases. It's pictures written with words. And so I came up with a system where I could take an essay, and then in that essay, highlight the really key phrases, especially the imagery that was in the essay, take those phrases out and turn those into a poem, and it would be a free verse poem. And then you could take the free verse poem and turn it into rhyming poetry or into a song. And so, you know, but I think a lot of people have poetry in them, they just don't realize it. And so I try to help my students discover that.
What tended to be, when you were kind of trying to draw that out of them and show them that they have poetry in them, how did kids react to that? Were they tentative at first? Was it hard to get kids to open up? I mean, I have such vulnerability that to kind of express that, especially in middle school. I think about myself in middle school. I don't know if I had the vocabulary to express all the things I was feeling. How do you draw that out of kids?
Right. That's a tough one. You know, the rare student wants to get up in front of the class and present what they've written. And so I would try to encourage, almost require all of my students and to share what they'd written and no one's perfect and to take what, you know, take credit for what you've written and find joy in it. So that's a tough one. I would stand up beside them in front of the classroom and do whatever I could to help them feel comfortable. It's a risk. I know as writers, we all feel the same thing. Sometimes you're laying yourself on the line there. You're opening yourself to criticism, and that's a tough thing. And I hope that I was able to help kids have more confidence in themselves in that way.